Welcome back to Angels and Seer Stones Presents Demons and Pendulums, our limited series on Chad Daybell and his beliefs. I titled this third episode, One Mighty and Strong. It's a story about how Chad Daybell went from an unexceptional novelist to a man who believed God had chosen him as a sort of messiah figure to prepare the world for the second coming. We'll look at this move in a series of stages, beginning with his rise to celebrity within the Latter-day Saint prepper subculture, and how he had set the groundwork for a schismatic church of his own during the period he developed a relationship with Lori Vallow. As I've said in past episodes, I didn't include Chad Daybell in my book, Terrible Revolution, Latter-day Saints and the American Apocalypse, because I thought I didn't need one more example of a 21st century visionary. His novels seemed largely derivative of more influential voices. And of course, he first came to my attention because he was publishing near-death experience literature with an apocalyptic slant, including that of Julie Robe. But I knew he wrote novels. One scholar had even discussed them in an essay on LDS apocalyptic literature. But these novels weren't good. His five-part series, Standing in Holy Places, begins with a book called The Great Gathering, which he published in 2007. The beginning of his series shows how Chad was tied into both LDS and evangelical apocalyptic fiction. The evangelical influence is obvious based on the emphasis on the mark of the beast, a microchip that people would have to have injected to remain part of society, to buy and sell and so on. You don't really see discussion of the mark of the beast in traditional Latter-day Saint apocalyptic, but this could have come into Chad's imagination through other LDS prepper visionaries, or perhaps through popular culture like the movie The Omen. LDS preppers would recognize Chad's emphasis on what is called the call-out. For 21st century LDS preppers, a tent city is today's bomb shelters. Thousands expect to one day participate in a call-out when the righteous will leave their homes and flee to camps. Usually, but not always, it's believed this direction, this call, will come from church leadership. The call-out is a modern expression of early Latter-day Saint understandings of what was called the gathering, which brought converts from many nations to the Great Basin. We can trace these current ideas of a call-out to Roger K. Young, the founder of LDS Avow. Young had a dream while on a mission in Chile in which he, quote, saw the formation of a tent city near St. George as the people were called to leave the Los Angeles area. In the mid-1990s, Young began to collect other accounts of dreams and visions of future tent cities. Other visionaries, including several who had experienced extensive near-death experiences, claimed to have seen the establishment of tent cities, or what came to be known in these writings as cities of light or places of refuge. I first heard this set of stories in 1999 when someone had told me of tent cities they had seen in a dream. These were in Manti, Utah. Maybe not coincidentally, Chad Daybell would claim to have seen similar tent cities in the Manti area. Chad's book begins with an earthquake that occurs in northern Utah and the coming of this new microchip system. In response, the church eventually issues a statement. This fictional statement reads in part, "Under the direction of the First Presidency, we issue an invitation of gathering to you. The church has prepared gathering places along the Wasatch Front where members of the church can be shielded from any turmoil that may soon come upon our nation." The fictional family that Chad will later reveal as his family, from Chad's hometown in Springville, are assigned to relocate to a nearby campground. So my point is that Chad wasn't so creative with this story. He was writing in a milieu, and he didn't stand out, at least not to me. But Chad would claim that he knew he was destined for greater things. I think of his first efforts to rise to significance in this apocalyptic community occurred when he started to gather professed visionaries to write books for him, which he would publish and then sell at these conferences. He had already published the writings of Suzanne Freeman and would soon sign up in 2014, Julie Rowe and Hector Souza later on. He tried to convince others, including David Warwick and Thomas Harrison, to write books for him. This was a commercial project, but maybe this was also about making sure he had influence in those circles. These would be his authors. In 2017, Chad Daybell announced his prophetic gifts. at least he, and publicly in a published book, and earlier, 2 years earlier, at least, he was giving firesides, speaking of his visions. Before we dive into Chad Daybell's prophetic call story, let me explain one of the key concepts of Latter-day Saint spirituality. It's something we call the veil. This is what separates humankind from the spiritual world and separates us from ultimate reality. Latter-day Saints believe we existed as spirits before we were born. The veil blocks our memories. The veil makes it so we can have a mortal test, living by faith, which you can only do if you don't remember the world before. In the past decade or so, you can find a lot of people claiming that reality as we experience it is a simulation. This idea shows up as far back as Plato's allegory of the cave. Latter-day Saints should be sympathetic to such ideas. They're trying to get across the same point Latter-day Saints are when they talk of a veil. So what does the veil concept have to do with Chad Daybell? It's not uncommon for Latter-day Saint visionaries to declare that they don't have a veil or that their veil is particularly thin. This is not a mainstream concept at all. LDS speak of the veil being thin at times, but they don't speak of personal veils that individuals have. Likewise, Latter-day Saint prophets, those official church leaders that we recognize as prophets and apostles, occasionally share a vision or dream that they have. And we believe that all of us can have such experiences. However, some LDS visionaries have taken a page from professional psychics and mediums and claim to be receiving constant revelation. There's a drastic difference between a prophet like Russell M. Nelson, the current president of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who frequently shares the revelations he has received from time to time, and someone like Julie Rowe or a medium like John Edwards, who professes to have immediate access to the supernatural world. I met a Latter-day Saint visionary who told me about his absence of a veil a few years ago. Now, let me tell you the story. In 2020, as news of J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan's disappearance circulated, I moved to a neighborhood in Springville, Utah. Like I already said, Springville was Chad Daybell's hometown, and I didn't move there out of any interest in Daybell. Springville is one of a half dozen cities around Brigham Young University that has more affordable housing. But in the 3 years we lived there, I did meet several of Chad and Tammy Daybell's friends and acquaintances. In fact, it wasn't too long after I met one of Chad's authors. It turned out that the visionary, Hector Souza, author of A Change is Coming, lived just 2 blocks from me, and actually was in the same LDS congregation I was. Due to a severe allergy, he did not attend, but I found his email and invited him over. We spent a few hours chatting about the last days and Chad Daybell, Julie Bro, and others. A month or two earlier, Hector had defended Chad and Lori from accusations that they had killed their children. It was a custody battle that had gotten out of control. Now that the bodies had been discovered, Hector realized Chad was guilty. In our conversation, he made it clear that he was no longer a supporter, and on the internet, he had likewise begun distancing himself from the two. We spent a lot of time discussing Hector's upbringing, and then we dug into spiritual gifts and visions. I told Hector that I fully believed in the possibility that someone might have a vision, but I was skeptical that there was anyone walking around without a veil. I expected him to agree with me, but instead, Hector waved his hand in front of his face and declared, "There's no veil here." He went on to tell me that when he meets someone, he can also see how they will die. Specifically, he would see how they would die in an impending flood in the valley we lived in. I playfully responded that it was a good thing I had moved my family so close to him, meaning that if his house was going to be safe, so would mine. He looked at me seriously and acknowledged that yes, that was true. A few days later, Hector sent me a document with photographs of soldiers in different military uniforms. He would hope that I could help provide reconnaissance when soldiers of various nations invaded the valley, presumably after this coming flood. I didn't hear from Hector again, but I enjoyed this brief interaction, and even though I don't think he held the gifts he claimed, I liked him. I thought he was sincere, as I do many of these individuals. But the reason I am bringing up Hector is because of his assurance that he did not have a veil. His description of this gift reminded me of a picture-in-picture television. It was as if he always had a mini screen being displayed at all times. Others have also declared that they have no veil. Denise Mendenhall, whose family insisted that when she had come out of a diabetic coma at the age of 9, she had come back without a veil. Denise could now see and converse with Jesus throughout her day. Jesus could give movie recommendations and tell her what to eat and provide immediate feedback for family behavior. Julie Rowe makes similar claims about the immediacy of her revelation. When I interviewed Julie Rowe in 2020 or 2021, she answered one of my questions and said, "I've never said this before, but I asked my angels and they said, yes, go ahead." Chad's prophetic call story is similar to these. It's not a vision of God that gets him started, like Joseph Smith or prophets in the Bible, Isaiah, Ezekiel, but it's a story of how he lost his veil. So how did Chad Daybell lose his veil? Like so many others, Chad professed to have come to his special spiritual gifts through near-death experiences. Now, these aren't typical near-death experiences where someone needed to be resuscitated. These were near-death experiences that came about while Chad was in a temporary daze after an accident. This first happened in 1985 when Chad was 17. While cliff jumping in a reservoir, he leaped off a high cliff. The impact was apparently traumatic. When he hit the water, Chad recalled that he saw a white flash and believed that he had broken his neck. Here, I'll read it from his memoir. "I quickly realized something even worse was happening. My spirit was partly out of my body. The best way to describe it is my physical body went deeper into the water than my spirit did. This caused my spirit to pop out through my head. But then it felt like my spirit's knees got stuck in my skull, and I didn't make it all the way out." He says he recovered seconds later, but he notes that his friends were looking for him to come to the surface for a while. In his memoir, Chad writes, "I believe when I hit the water and my spirit exited my body, my personal veil was torn open near my forehead and never sealed up properly." Later in this same memoir, he tells another story in which his veil was ripped further. As a scholar of Latter-day Saint schism and apocalyptic prophets, I find this claim of having a spiritual gift coming about via trauma an interesting development, and it is a development. Of course, the whole purpose of saying one doesn't have a veil is for the veilless visionary to claim revelation. And unlike other Latter-day Saints who would have to make it a matter of extensive prayer and contemplation, and more often than not, great patience, Chad, in this case, had immediate access to the spiritual world. So apparently Chad was telling this story privately before 2017, but his big announcement came around the time he published his memoir that year. And the memoir I've been quoting from is called Living on the Edge of Heaven. Of course, Chad's announcement that he was himself a visionary brought new opportunities. Christopher Parrott, who took over the LDS prepper website LDS Avow after Roger K. Young retired, hired Chad to produce a weekly newsletter for those members who subscribed to the additional GRI forum. GRI stood for Global Research Initiative, and it cost an extra $5. Chad's newsletters emphasized different aspects of prepping and last days timelines, or even his own visions and dreams. I'm sure this helped with his general book sales, and now Chad had new things to include in his public lectures. He was starting to accrue groupies who wanted to know all the details of the apocalypse. In 2015, there was a series of posts on LDS Avow where people had attended one of his lectures in Manti, and afterwards they were debating and digging into it and sharing notes. There was a great deal of interest and trust that Chad knew what he was talking about, and I think we can see he kind of entered a new phase of the way people interacted with him. I think it's important to recognize that LDS Avow and the conferences and podcasts set up by Preparing a People played a major role in Chad developing his following. They had their platforms in place that allowed and encouraged the commercialization of spiritual gifts. It was to their advantage to have someone like Chad Daybell show up and get people excited. This is true whether those involved were sincere or not. So long as cash exchanged hands, there was a mutual benefit for Visionary and these platforms. It's unlikely Chad was paid for his appearances at Preparing a People, but Preparing a People got paid, and he could sell his books and build his celebrity. These groups played a role similar to a sports promoter. Chad's popularity is not disconnected from these organizations, a theme we'll talk about again in episode 9 of this series. But it's key to remember that the vast majority of those who went to these meetings and participated on the LDS Avow forums believed themselves loyal to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Chad was an interesting voice that they could listen to satisfy their curiosity on particulars of the last days not being discussed in official church settings. But if he directly claimed to be superior to church leaders, his popularity would take a major hit, and he was aware of that. This is where the March 22, 2018 GRI newsletter on LDS Avow came in. Chad Daybell shared a series of dreams he titled The Train Dreams, Rolling into the Future. In the series of dreams, Chad watched a train that represented God's church in the last days. The train begins small, and as it picks up speed over time, more cars are added, and he sees different prophets, that is the historical leaders of the faith, preaching from the upper level of the train. In time, he was brought to the upper area himself and found himself surrounded by several prominent Latter-day Saint authors. The prophet of the 1990s, Gordon B. Hinckley, raised his cane in the air and smiled at them, but he wasn't doing the preaching. This was a start to what Chad called the changing of the guard. These authors were conveying the most important gospel truths, while general authorities were just lending their encouragement. In a final dream, these authors, like Chad Daybell, lost the active support of church leaders. A man on the train explained to Chad Daybell that, and I'm going to quote this, "Times have changed. Gospel knowledge won't be served on a silver platter anymore. We are now in an era where the saints must seek out truth and develop their own testimonies rather than live on borrowed light. There must be a space of time when the saints show their true allegiance before the coming tribulations. The prophetic word has been pulled back for a time as other witnesses come forth to testify of these truths. The saints must learn to recognize the Spirit in their lives rather than following the prophet like unquestioning sheep." Chad then saw that the Lord was using visionaries outside of the church hierarchy to bring this knowledge to the people. He saw, and I'll quote this part too, "I returned to the upper deck and saw a man known as Spencer sitting nearby who had written a book called Visions of Glory. He looked like he'd been put through the ringer. We were soon joined by a pair of new authors named Julie Rowe and Hector Souza that I had published books for. Much like those earlier messengers, these three authors spoke of troubled times coming, including upcoming earthquakes in Utah, but they always pointed back to the living prophets as the ones to follow. I don't think we can overestimate what an important moment Chad Daybell's announcement of this dream really was. Here he was coming out and saying very clearly that his teachings would be more important, more helpful than those of the prophet of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But the train dreams were also a cautious play for power. Chad's words were more important than those of church leaders, but he was just one of many visionaries of apparently equal status, and they would remain faithful to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, even while their leaders no longer shared the most important teachings or warnings with the saints. That was now their job. Yet in time, Chad's visions told him he was to be the head of this movement. Chad expected to be Christ's main representative before the second coming. Yet in time, Chad's visions told him he was to be the head of the movement. Chad expected to be Christ's main representative before the second coming. Chad Daybell is one of hundreds of Latter-day Saints who have believed themselves to be messianic figures. And this is what I want to talk about now. I want to talk about something that I've called elsewhere Mormon messianism. The idea that in the last days, there'll be one or more figures that will be prominent in God's work to prepare for the second coming and the building of Zion in the last days. There are whole hosts of potential messianic figures from which a schismatic leader might choose to present themselves. Many of them show up in Latter-day Saint scripture or were discussed among early church leaders. You might be familiar with some of these titles: the man like unto Moses, the one mighty and strong, the Davidic servant, the heir of Levi, the branch prophet. An Orthodox Latter-day Saint would likely see these prophesied figures as already fulfilled references to Jesus Christ or Joseph Smith, or would have their fulfillment with the second coming of Christ or a future prophet in the church. The key is that Orthodox believers are not expecting a messianic figure to show up outside of the church's hierarchy. If these prophecies were fulfilled the way a schismatic prophet might present them, then it suggests that there is something unfixable about the church itself. Chad Daybell has never called himself the one mighty and strong. Did he think that he was that individual? Clearly. His friend Eric Smith came to that conclusion, and certainly Chad thought that he was going to bring the faith to the next level. And through that transition, he would emerge as the uncontested head of the religion. specifically Chad Daybell, would be the head of the Church of the Firstborn. There's been some chatter about the Church of the Firstborn this past week, including on Mormon Stories. What is the Church of the Firstborn? Church of the Firstborn is seemingly, like I said, the next level of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, at least in Chad Daybell's understanding. Those involved are exclusively the righteous. The Church of the Firstborn shows up in LDS scripture as a description of those who dwell in the highest degree of heaven, and in another passage as a name for the Church of the Righteous in the last days. We'll spend more time on this concept and the missions Chad believed he was to perform with Lori Vallow in episode 5. So when I say Chad was in effect a schismatic prophet, I don't say this because he was a visionary. There are LDS visionaries who sincerely support the LDS Church's leadership. It was not because of his polygamous affair with Lori Vallow or even his belief that he was a messianic figure. He could have held any number of beliefs or did any number of evil deeds and still imagined he was loyal to the church. This would make him a scoundrel, but not a schismatic prophet. The key is that Daybell was already forming an institution of sorts. He was already bringing people into the Church of the Firstborn. The most important element of an LDS new religious movement, a schism from the faith, is something we tend to call the claim. Why does this particular charismatic figure have divine authority? Joseph Smith claimed ordinations from angels. Later sects have tried to show that their leader held a priesthood lineage dating back to Joseph Smith, or rarely that additional angels have come in the present to ordain them to authority in the same way that these original angels did Joseph Smith. Several would-be prophets have made this claim to private angelic ordination. The first may have been Francis Gladden Bishop in the 1830s. Others, James J. Strang, claimed that he was ordained by an angel at the moment of Joseph Smith's death. Jim Harmston in the 1990s claimed that he had been ordained by four angels, which would lead to the organization of his church, the True and Living Church of Jesus Christ of Saints of the Last Days. Chad Daybell had begun to also speak of private angelic ordination. He told his inner circle that he had been ordained by Peter, James, and John, the special group of three apostles closest to Jesus, and that these three beings had given him the patriarchal priesthood. These same three beings had appeared to give Joseph Smith the Melchizedek priesthood before the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was organized. Chad said these angels gave him patriarchal priesthood. Presumably, this would be the authority by which he would ordain people members of the 144,000 and perform other ordinances. And perhaps the most obvious moment he's using this patriarchal priesthood is when he gives a patriarchal blessing, which of course we'll talk about in the coming episode. So in this episode, we went through Chad Daybell's increasingly bold claims to specialness. He starts as a novelist, begins to publish visionary authors. He then claims that he too had a near-death experience and through it had lost his veil. LDS avow and preparing a people provided a platform for his materials. He begins to get a broader following. Then Chad introduces the idea that the words of these visionaries, himself included, are superior to church leaders he professes to support. And finally, he establishes his messianic claims and a claim that angels had appointed him to build the Church of the Firstborn. It's a wild story. Next week, in an episode entitled Energy Work, you'll learn about Chad's introduction to the Emotion Code, his association with Julie Rowe, and I'll answer the question why Chad Daybell used a pendulum. Before our next episode of Demons and Pendulums comes out, we'll have an Angels and Seer Stones episode on folklore surrounding Latter-day Saint temple garments. We'll see you next time.